Hi, everyone. This is Joe Bianco, co-producer and co-host of the Defining Moments podcast. Hippocrates, often called the father of medicine, is credited with saying, "It's far more important to know what person the disease has than what disease the person has." 2,000 years later, Hippocrates' words still resonate. At the heart of the quote is a question we grapple with today. How do we humanize the culture and practice of medicine? Storytelling, while not a mainstream practice in the medical profession, offers one solution for patients and providers alike. From the recent renewed interest in medical humanities to physician Rita Sharon's seminal work on narrative medicine, storytelling is increasingly seen as a conduit to building empathy and fostering authentic connections in clinical practice. With so much attention given to humanizing patients, it's easy to forget that physicians have stories too. Behind every white coat is a person whose experiences and defining moments have led them to become, among other things, lifelong stewards of health and healing. Today, we're talking about Behind the White Coat, an annual storytelling event at Ohio University's Heritage College of Osteopathic Medicine. Now in its eighth year, Behind the White Coat is a student-led evening of storytelling in which medical students, physicians, administrators, and staff at the college embrace vulnerability, reveal their defining moments and previously untold experiences, and share lessons learned on their path to medicine. Now there's so much more to Behind the White Coat, but I'm going to leave that to our guests to discuss. Joining me today are Sumita Capagangela and Libby Hill, two brilliant, compassionate, and dynamic human beings who also happen to be third-year medical students at Ohio University. I've been honored to work closely with Sumita and Libby through their participation in the Open Book Project, our narrative medicine elective, and as a faculty advisor for Behind the White Coat. Sumita and Libby were storytellers in the 2024 Behind the White Coat, our sixth annual one, and they went on to become executive producers and student leaders of a special version of the event that took place last February. Libby and Sumita, I am so excited to have this conversation with you. Welcome to Defining Moments.
A good friend once asked me, if you could open a door and have it lead anywhere in the world, where would it lead to? And I knew my answer without even hesitating. I'm Sumita Capagangela, and that was the opening of a story I wrote in my first year of medical school called A Tale of Devotion.
It's July 3rd now, a Monday. I might teach you that all these fireworks are just for you because you are destined for greatness. Not to add pressure, you're only 2 days old. Greatness will come easily to you, Libby. Just know we will be okay. And maybe Nicolas Cage will be your dad one day. I wish. I'm Libby Hill, and that was an excerpt from my story I wrote as a first-year medical student called My Artifact.
Well, we are so excited to have you. Thank you both. So we're here to talk about Behind the White Coat, but before we get there, I'd like to kind of pan back a little bit and give our listeners a context for what medical school is like, because you put together Behind the White Coat in the middle of your second year of medical school. So I want them to understand a little bit more about the process, what you learn, and what it's like in those first 2 years.
Oh my goodness. Craziest 2 years of my life. That's for sure. I'd say a lot depends on how you manage your time. The first 2 years spent mostly in the classroom, as well as the OMM lab doing osteopathic manipulative treatments on each other and standardized patients, and then also practicing clinical skills in the clinical training and assessment center. Besides that, I was also involved in a lot of other clubs, similarly to how you can be an undergrad. I was part of the pediatrics club. I was our student osteopathic medical association president, as well as a member of the emergency medicine and OBGYN interest clubs as well. So there's a lot of freedom to spend your time how you please in medical school while also delving into the rigorous topics. And something really cool about HCOM is the way that we're able to kind of self-direct our learning and study before entering the classroom where we delve further into topics.
Specifically, both of you are going to graduate with a Doctor of Osteopathic Medicine degree. So what is osteopathy and how does it differ from allopathic medicine?
I think that they have their similarities. And while we're doing the same things in the end, being able to see patients, prescribe medications, perform surgeries, and lead the healthcare team, I think that something that differentiates DOs a little bit is this additional tool that Libby touched on earlier, osteopathic manipulative medicine, or OMM. And it's a really nice way for doctors to basically use their hands to basically feel for different abnormalities, tension in the body, or other kinds of changes that a person might have as a result of stress or a disease or anything else that might be going on in their life. Sometimes we can see that result in the body. And so it's really cool that, you know, as future DOs, that we have this interesting technique that we can use our hands to kind of assess a patient and also know some treatments that we can use to treat those different findings.
Yeah, it adds such a nice layer to traditional medical education, because as you pointed out, you're getting the exact same education as MDs with an additional layer that allows you to view and the body holistically, to read the body for imbalances, and to use your hands to correct, heal, and promote health in patients. So it's a very nice sort of tie-in also to what we're going to be talking about today when we think about stories and understanding the whole person and the people behind those stories. Seems like a very osteopathic concept, at least philosophically.
I love that. I think the exact same thing. And I, like Samaita said, I love the extra tool that we have in the toolbox with being doctors of osteopathic medicine and learning how to think about the patient as a whole. And like you said, Dr. Bianco, that includes their stories. So I love the osteopathy elevator pitch per se. I actually I'm dating a MD, so I have been really fine-tuning my pitch, because I'm like, you got to know what a DO does. But I've also just really appreciated, like Samaita said, getting to use our hands. And I've recently been able to treat my little brother, and he told me his ankle is feeling so much better from when he twisted it a couple weeks ago. So it's just a really cool extra spark, I feel like, that we get in our education.
That's wonderful. So the path to medicine begins now. That's really exciting. So med school is busy, right? I think you both would agree. And I'm always impressed when students have time for extracurricular activities, but especially something like Behind the White Coat, which is a very intense and detailed sort of event. It's a lot to do. And both of you were not only storytellers 1 year, but you were both actually the executive co-producers of the event the following year. So as we start to think about Behind the White Coat, I'd love to give our listeners a sense of what the event is, what a typical Behind the White Coat format looks like, and kind of bring that to life for those who have not been in the audience and seen it.
This event was created to kind of create a space where we have like medical students, faculty, and everyone else in the community that wants to get involved can essentially take a step back from their workload and all the responsibilities of their daily life and just kind of have a reminder of who they are and why they chose to pursue medicine.
I love that. When I think of Behind the White Coat, I think of the fireplace that we put up on all the screens, that the room that we transform that's typically a learning space into a comfy, cozy, welcoming space for anybody. I also think about the hot chocolate bar, because that is one of my favorite parts. Personally, Behind the White Coat as a storyteller back in 2024 was a truly defining moment for me as a first year medical student. I really was not feeling like I had found my place at HCOM, and I had recently been Googling how to transfer medical schools, and I just did not feel like I was supposed to be there. And I genuinely can say after this event, those feelings dissipated so quickly, being able to see the community and how everybody showed up for each other and how I could be vulnerable and have that space and form deep connections with my peers. Truly, like, as cliche as it sounds, it was life-changing, and it showed me what HCOM can be and all the incredible ness that has come from that since that night.
Interesting. I didn't know that, Libby, that you had been sort of on the fence and that it was the, I guess that would have been the 2024 Behind the White Coat when you both were first year students that kind of maybe tipped the needle in the other direction. I'm very grateful that you stayed. Now I'm even more grateful for Behind the White Coat. Yeah, and thank you for that description. And we've created it to be sort of like an open mic, only it's not really an open mic because we solicit stories from faculty and students and staff in advance, and we kind of screen them and we try to have a bit of a time limit, arrange the order in a thoughtful way so that the stories are kind of counterbalanced, and there's usually music in the middle. And each year, the student producers put their own touch to it. They, like Libby, you were saying about the active learning classroom, it's no longer a learning classroom. It's this sort of cozy and relaxing space. Looks different every year depending on the aesthetics of the producers. But I think by the end of the night, the oxytocin levels in that room are off the chart. There's just so much empathy and connection happening. And speaking of the stories, so Sumedha, we heard you talk in the beginning of the podcast. You read a little bit of your 2024 story called A Tale of Devotion, and that's T-A-I-L. Your story has stayed with me ever since. It was beautiful. Can you tell us a little bit about it and what it was? What was on the other side of that hypothetical door that you kicked the story off with?
Yeah, I was so glad that I was able to share that story. It was about a memory that I think has stood out in my mind for quite some time. And the story was about our beloved family dog, Caesar. He was a big German shepherd, and he looked all tough and scary, but he was a big softy at heart. He lived in Hyderabad, India, and that is where my grandparents are living, so he stayed with them. And I think that hypothetical door kind of transcends, like, since it's hypothetical, I think we can say that it kind of transcends place and also time. And I think that it would be really amazing to open that door and go back in time to Hyderabad at a time when Caesar is still around. I just feel like I learned so much from him. When he was there, about his quiet devotion. I learned so much about loyalty from him. And I think, you know, it's easy to see that in people, just because, you know, we're surrounded all day by people. And so I think it's easier to pick up those lessons from people. But when you see something like this in a dog, just his quiet loyalty and dedication to his people, I just think that really left a mark on me. Especially at a time when I wasn't doing very well. So that's kind of what my story was about, and a tribute to him, and all the joy that he had brought into my life when he was there.
Yeah, it was very moving the way you wrote about Caesar and how, in a sense, he nursed you back to health, being such a loyal companion while you were ill when you traveled to India that time. And it stayed with me and made me rethink the idea of who's a healer and who's not.
I think I agree with that, especially as, like, as people who are trying to become healers, maybe not for animals, for humans. But, you know, I just think, like, thinking about Caesar and how he somehow knew that, you know, that I wasn't at my best that day, and he just somehow knew what he had to do to get me up and moving and trying to tap into my energy a little bit. And so I just think that memory just stuck out to me in my mind, even though it was years and years ago now. And I'm just really glad I had an opportunity to share it with people.
And Libby, the same night that Sumedha presented A Tale of Devotion, you presented your story titled My Artifact, and we heard a little excerpt from it at the beginning of the podcast as well. So walk us through the memorable story that you told. And in the process, can you let us know how July 3rd, fireworks, and Nicolas Cage are all connected to who you are today?
Of course. The title for my story, first off, came from my participation in the Open Book Project, another really important part of my first 2 years of medical school. And background of that is that in each session, each week, we look at an artifact, whether that be a poem, a piece of artwork, etc., and have a really deep discussion about what that artifact means and how to interpret it. And it just made me think, in Open Book Project, it just made me think in a whole new way that I had never thought of before, especially as someone who does not consider herself to have an artistic bone in her body, being able to look at art and appreciate it and think about how it relates to my future as a physician just really stood out to me. So that's where my title came from, because that excerpt I read, I actually did not write it. My mom wrote it back on July 2nd into July 3rd of 2000, and it is a part of a journal entry that she wrote while she was in the hospital with me after she had just given birth to me. As a 25-year-old single mom, I was her first kid, and I felt like Behind the White Coat was a really special, I was hoping it would be, I had never been to it before, but it was a really, it seemed like the right spot to share this really cool thing that my mom gave me. She gave me this journal entry actually on the day of my college graduation from Michigan State, and she presented it as an envelope, and I was like, oh, what are you doing? I was about to give a speech. I was our college graduation commencement speaker, so I was really anxious, like, oh my gosh, I'm gonna have to speak in front of 10,000 people, and my mom's handing me this envelope. And then just absolute waterworks as I read it, and she said that she had given it to me that day because she had, as I mentioned, she had talked a lot about how she felt that I was destined for greatness, and that she made me pinky swear to her as a 2-day-old that I would graduate from college. And so it was really special to receive that day, and therefore being able to present that. I actually got to read it in front of her, which was really funny, at Behind the White Coat, and kind of reflect on how that has made me the person I am today, and how I can picture her sitting in that hospital room alone after everybody has left, worrying about how she was going to take care of me as a single mom. We also grew up pretty low below the poverty line, so making ends meet and her assuring me that we would be okay all came from that. And I definitely, every year, I know there's fireworks and I know they're for me. Nicolas Cage has not yet become my dad, however, there's still hope out there. But it was just a really cool, it felt like all everything coming together in a sense of like my mom manifesting all of this for me in my future, and me being able to read this as a medical student, as someone who's graduated college, as a first generation college student, a first generation graduate student, and being able to really share that side of me that I don't present very often, and have my mom there with me while I did it was just, I can't even put into words how incredible it was.
I imagine it was incredible for her too, having not thought that 24 years earlier, 23 years earlier, a journal entry / letter to her as of then unborn daughter would then become a centerpiece of a storytelling event when her daughter was in medical school.
Oh, yes. And I didn't tell her that's what I was reading. So she got quite the surprise. She talked about all of her. She left not one stone unturned of her birth story in that journal entry. But it was just fun to make it a comical but also very meaningful presentation to her and my peers.
Yeah, I think one of the most powerful things about both of your stories was that you brought Caesar, you brought your mother into the room, and your mother was literally in the room. But I felt like the way, Sumedha, you described Caesar and his attentiveness to you and the kind of loving descriptions of what he looked like and how he behaved, and then hearing your mother's voice directly through you, Libby, really made them alive and present. I think we all kind of felt it in the audience that night.
Very special night. It was great. And I felt like just the way that all of the storytellers are able to really present their story and make you feel as if you're there and you're part of that life, or part of their life, is just so fascinating to me.
Hi folks, this is Joe breaking in for just a second. We've been talking to third-year medical students Sumedha Capigantula and Libby Hill about the role of storytelling in medical education and clinical care. For your convenience, we've placed links to the Behind the White Coat website on our Facebook page. Okay, back to the conversation. Now, last year, you both became executive co-producers of Behind the White Coat, meaning that your role previously was just to submit a story, a 10-minute story, and present it. But the following year, last year, you were the leadership team, and you planned every detail of the event, from recruitment to catering to scheduling to room setup. You had a neurotic faculty advisor who checked in way too much, and you were always on top of everything, both of you. Then you co-hosted Behind the White Coat in such an amazingly relatable and wonderful way. The styles you each had were perfectly complementary, and you really made the event an incredible success. What was it like occupying that very different and much larger role when you were co-producers?
It felt like we were hosting like a big gathering at like our house. Like me and Libby were co-hosting this event at our shared house. That's kind of what it felt like. It was, you know, like we have like the aesthetic kind of things, you know, like making the decorations looked nice and the lights were perfect, but also working with the tech team and the school administration to make sure that, you know, all the logistical things were sound. It was setting up the event and like taking a step back and seeing like the culmination of months of planning and efforts just kind of coming together in that beautiful setting. And the day of the event was making sure people were having a bite to eat and making sure our speakers knew that we were proud of them and we were so excited to hear what they had to say. And it was welcoming people into the room, welcoming their acquaintances, making introductions, doing small talk, like putting people at ease and making them feel comfortable for this event. And it was honestly so much fun. I think it was incredibly meaningful to be able to organize something both, you know, in front of people, like moving the event along, but also like behind the scenes and what people might not have seen as directly. I think it was just so moving for ourselves, but also to see our friends and colleagues be able to stand in front of their friends and co-workers and colleagues and be able to share these stories. I just think it was so wonderful, and honestly I'm so glad that me and Libby were able to co-host together, because I think we were the perfect team.
Agreed.
Yes. I'm so thankful I got to do this with Sumedha. She was a wonderful co-host, and she's an even better friend. So being able to text each other without worrying about bothering each other or anything like that. We had to figure out what we were going to wear, and I mean, all of that good stuff. So yeah, I couldn't agree more with what she said. And honestly, just a huge shout out to the tech team, Student Affairs, Sarah Lawrence, the Storytelling Institute, Lynn Harder, OU Catering. There's so many people to thank, especially Dr. Bianco. I want to call you our neurotic faculty advisor, but I would call you very put together and encouraging, and a perfect complement to our team. I was so proud to see how everything came together, because I felt I'm very type A, I hate to admit it. Big surprise, I'm sure, to everyone on this call. But it was really hard, because I felt like as we were planning it, I couldn't really see anything tangible coming together. Like I was just we were checking off a list of getting things done. But that day when I walked in before coming back for the actual event and seeing how our vision really came to life in Heritage Hall. It quite literally brought tears to my eyes. You can all attest to that. It was just phenomenal, and I'm so thankful to have had the opportunity to host this. I wasn't sure that it was something that I was going to do this past year, but I'm very thankful Sean, past host Sean Dement, and Suzanne, they really convinced me to do it, and I could not thank them more as either. It was the highlight again, the highlight of my year, and I hope to be able to be present as many behind the white coats to come.
I hope so too. And we haven't mentioned yet, but for those who can't be present, we do have a website and an archive, a digital archive of all of the stories dating back to 2019. And those are stories by medical students, physicians, faculty, staff. Each one is a treasure in itself. And we'll continue to collect and archive those stories. You know, I started off the introduction to this podcast with a quote from Hippocrates, and another one now comes to mind. Different one. He said, "Life is short, art is long." And by that, I think he meant that, you know, the amount of time we have on this planet may be brief, but what we leave behind, what we create, and the effect it has on people endures. I'm thinking of this quote because last year's Behind the White Coat was an especially poignant event because it was also a tribute to a beloved colleague, HCOM royalty. His name was Mark Loudon. He had been with the medical school for many, many years. He was ill with terminal cancer as we were producing Behind the White Coat, and afterward, he passed away. Mark worked in our active learning classrooms, and he touched the lives of countless generations of future physicians. It's impossible to quantify or describe the effect he had on all of us, whether we were students, staff, faculty. Mark centered us. He was sort of a Marvel Universe tier human being, and he also served as the videographer of Behind the White Coat since its start in 2019. This was the first year that he couldn't attend in person, but thanks to our wonderful tech team, he was able to watch it from home. So can you tell our listeners how you both customized Behind the White Coat as a tribute to Mark and what that meant to you personally?
I think that one of the most important things, I think the one of the most easily recognizable things that we did this year, we had a lot of purple at this event this year, and that was Mark's favorite color. You would always see him in his purple button down when he was at school, and that was kind of one of the easiest ways to see where he was. He was walking down the hall in that very recognizable purple shirt. And I think that, you know, we kind of made that the theme of the night, purple. So there were purple lights, there were purple lights everywhere. We had, purple furniture on the stage, purple flowers set up, in the room, outside the room. And those were some of the things that you could see very quickly, but there were also a lot of other little details that, while it could seem like it was like a fun little surprise to many, I think people who knew Mark would recognize those little details as things that were important to him. Throughout the event, you would see lots of little toys, like little rubber ducks, little like squishy toys, all sorts of little trinkets just spread out all around the room. And I think we actually had enough that everyone could take one home with them if they wanted to, as like a nice reminder of him. He would often have these little toys with him in his office, but he'd also give them out to medical students as a way to kind of brighten their spirits when he was at school. So being a lot of us med students look forward to was the little toys and stickers that Mark would bring to class. So that was also really nice. And I think another touch that we tried to do as well, he's a big fan of Bruce Springsteen music. And so we played music that was something he definitely enjoyed, kind of in our intermission time, and kind of as people were filing in or leaving at the end, and kind of dispersing after the end of the event. And it was a nice way to kind of bring him into that space. And so I think there were a lot of ways that we incorporated Mark into that event. And I think it meant a lot to both Libby and me that he was able to see this event and see how many people were there in support of such a wonderful person.
I remember feeling a lot of pressure when it was announced that Sumedha and I would be the executive producers this year before we had learned of Mark's diagnosis, because a big part of this role was getting to add your extra spark or doing something new or that had not been done before for the event, to leave your mark on it. And I just was like, what am I going to do? That was the best night of my life. Like, what detail can I add to make it better? Like, maybe more marshmallows at the hot chocolate bar? I don't know. But it was so quickly evident how special this could be, with how much Mark meant to HCOM and still means to HCOM, and how much work he had put into this event. I mean, I introduced him to my mom at it last year. I was like, this is Mark. He was my first favorite person at the medical school. Close second was Dr. Bianco, of course. But I just think back to, I tried to tell myself I wouldn't get teary-eyed. I still have a hard time talking about Mark because of how special he was. And it's hard when you think about wanting someone to know how special they were to you. And I think back to it was actually the second day of orientation during first year, and my seat was so perfectly sat right in front of Mark's tech table in the first floor classroom. So he was right there, and I was like, oh, this guy, I can't go on Amazon. He's going to see if I'm not paying attention. And all the while I was worrying about what was on my computer screen, I scooted a little too far forward in my chair and just completely fell to the floor. And that was the start of our, I would call it a friendship. And later on, we had our body donor memorial service, and he had told me how he could tell how much I really care just by how I was reacting to that event. And it made me feel really seen, because I am known as an empath, and sometimes it feels as though it's a weakness. And I felt really seen as that being a strength, and that's something. And he told me, he was like, I can tell you're meant to be here. And that has stayed with me. And then, of course, as Sumedha mentioned, Mark's toys. Again, he got the great seat behind me on the first floor classroom, and he had given us those sticky men that fall down the wall when you stick them up there. And me and another classmate were like, I wonder if we can get it to stick to the ceiling. And so, of course, during one of our many very important lectures that I should have maybe not been throwing sticky men on the ceiling for, we decided to test that hypothesis, and it stayed up there. And it was actually still up. And Mark thought this was hilarious, by the way. He took a picture of it. He thought it was the funniest thing in the world. And I was very happy to see that during the 2025 Behind the White Coat as executive producers, the sticky man's foot was still up on the ceiling almost 2 years, two-ish years later. Yeah, because that would have gone up there fall of 2023. So he is resilient, and he is still hanging out in there on that ceiling. But it just was so special to be able to have that event be so Mark-coded. It made it feel even better. I don't own much purple clothing, but Sumedha and I looked really great in our purple for Mark. And also knowing that he was able to watch from home and listen. And I felt like I was able to have a conversation with him, which made learning of his passing just a couple weeks later a little bit easier.
Mark's wife, Jill, also works at the med school, and she submitted a story for Behind the White Coat in our Mark-themed event. And her story was a wonderful sort of retelling of their love story, because she knew that for the first time in 20-something years, a future generation of new students at HCOM would not get to know Mark. And so she sort of preserved their love story, which was tied into the Marvel Universe in beautiful and hilarious ways at that event, and showed pictures. And I think the combination of the attention that you put, both of you put into really honoring Mark and making sure that that entire room just sang of him in every corner, to Jill's story, to the community that formed there, standing room only, was a great testament to the person and he was.
And the purple lights did not get taken down for quite a bit after it. That was my favorite part of our active learning classroom. Jess from the tech team was like, we'll see how long they keep them up there. And as far as I know, they were there the rest of the year.
I love it. I hope the foot's still up there too. So transitioning now from talking about the event itself, let's talk about what it means. So from your perspective as medical students, what does a storytelling event like Behind the White Coat actually mean? How does it relate to medicine? And what role do you think storytelling should have in either medical education or clinical practice?
I think it really emphasizes the importance of separating a person from what pathology they might have, like separating a person from a disease that they might have or a limb difference that they might have, because a person is more than their disease. They carry so much more. They have so many lived experiences, family and friends and loved ones and all sorts of things in their life that are more. And so I think that events like Behind the White Coat and things that emphasize the importance of storytelling really show us how important it is to recognize the person. I think this plays very well with our osteopathic philosophy of seeing the person as a whole.
I agree with what Tomato said. I like to think about it as how we see patients one day, as, like she said, not seeing them just for their potential ailment, but for the person. But also, I like to think about it with how we view each other and how we view others in our profession. It's hard. It's really, really hard to be in medicine, especially nowadays. And I think sometimes it's easy to assume things about people who are in this field. And so really just thinking about where people come from and having that empathy and listening to their story and understanding them better can make workplace environments better, can make people feel better about their job. I wholeheartedly believe that it can contribute to a decrease in physician burnout that we're so readily seeing increase after the pandemic. So I think it's important to think about it from how we view patients, but also how we view each other and how we view individuals who decide to go into medicine.
Excellent. So you're both third year students. You just started year three. What's next for each of you on your path to medicine?
I think the next step for both of us is rotations, and that is kind of the next step into our careers. I am personally very excited about kind of moving into the clinical world. I mean, it's one thing to kind of learn, you know, from a lecture, from a textbook, in like a classroom, and it definitely is necessary and important. And I think now that we've reached the stage where we're kind of applying that to real patients and real cases and actually connecting with people. I think this is going to be a really exciting phase of our education. And I'm just really excited to get back into some of the communities that I actually grew up in to further my learning. So I'm very excited to start that and kind of figure out how I'm going to give back to this community one day.
Yeah, I am so excited to start seeing patients and being able to put what we've learned into the classroom a little bit into more real life, real world learning. I am also just recently moved back to the community I'm from. I'm back in Toledo to start third year here and see patients here, and I could not be more excited. I start in the emergency department. That's my first rotation, which is super exciting for me because as of now, if I had to pick right now, I definitely see myself working in the emergency department in the future. I'm also very excited because I've found a passion in working with the underserved populations, and we do have quite a bit of an underserved, uninsured, and people suffering from homelessness population in Toledo, and I'm excited to be able to lend a helping hand in a sense and hopefully be a positive light and someone who's willing to listen to their story, even if it is in just a 5 to 10 minute emergency department visit. I am really excited about that. And that's something I definitely see on my path in the future as a practicing physician, is prioritizing care for the underserved.
Well, I'm personally excited for both of your future patients because, boy, are they in for outstanding physicians. I cannot wait. So I'd like now to conclude sort of where we began. Libby and Sumita, let's return to your stories from behind the white coat and with the poignant sort of messages of hope and understanding that you imparted on that night. So Sumita, can you please read another excerpt from A Tale of Devotion?
I would love to. They say that dogs come into our lives to teach us about love and that they depart to teach us about loss. And I didn't have months and years with Caesar. I only had about 3 weeks. But I learned so much from him. I learned from him what it means to show up for someone, especially when they're not able to do that for themselves. I learned what it meant to encourage someone to run and jump and dance for all the small little steps, all the small little progressions. And I learned from him how to help someone help themselves, before I ever set foot in the school where that's one of our core philosophies.
Thank you. And Libby, can you read an excerpt from my artifact?
Yes, I just got goosebumps from Samantha's story again. Oh my goodness. While my artifact represents who I am and where I came from, it also encapsulates the vulnerability and uncertainty my mom was experiencing at that moment in time, less than 48 hours after bringing me into this world. Now, 24 years later, I feel a profound connection to the young mother who wrote this. Being a medical student is undoubtedly characterized as an uncertain and vulnerable time. Over the last 6 months, while completing my first semester and a half of medical school, I found myself needing more reassurance than ever that I really am destined for greatness, hoping that greatness manifests in the type of physician I am one day. Not only was I molded and shaped by the woman who created this artifact, but the artifact provides the reassurance that keeps me sane, making the uncertainty less debilitating. I've gained a very unique perspective and have found a passion in caring for others in a state of uncertainty and vulnerability, something I am confident will translate into my career as a physician.
Sumita and Libby, I think you've restored the public's faith in the future of medicine. Thank you both for being part of Defining Moments today.
Thank you so much, Dr. Bianco.
Thank you. This was so incredible, and I am so honored to have been a part of Defining Moments today. Thank you so much again.
Thanks for joining me and third-year medical students Sumita Capigantula and Libby Hill for this episode of the Defining Moments podcast. Defining Moments is produced by WOUB Public Media and the Barbara Geralds Institute for Storytelling and Social Impact. The Storytelling Institute imagines a world where storytelling creates just and joyful communities. Lynn Harder and I are co-producers, and Colin Cameron is our audio engineer. You can subscribe to Defining Moments at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or on the NPR podcast directory. Please follow us on Facebook and Instagram at DMPodcastWOUB. On our Facebook page, we provide links to the Behind the White Coat website, where you can learn more about this storytelling event and view digital archives of every story told since its inception in 2019. We hope you'll take time to rate and review the podcast. Thank you and be well.